This weekend starts right after this.
When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to GEICO.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Friction between the FBI and White House. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up during this program.
The Federal Bureau of Investigation under Director James Comey isn't falling in line with the way the Obama administration would like. You'll hear examples.
On the health front, how are your supplements interacting with your prescription drugs?
On the tech front, the HoloLens from Microsoft. Here are the new possibilities for virtual reality.
And what's wrong with golf? A lot of new faces are grabbing clubs for the first time, but not a second time.
Golf now actually is attracting more beginners to the sport than it has in more than a decade. However, the sport is still steadily losing overall participants. Not many of these new people that the game attracts every year stick with it. And so if the sport could really keep more of the beginners that it attracts to try the game and try to get them hooked on it, it would be doing much better.
Wall Street Journal reporter Brian Costa on reasons people try golf once but don't return. He's here later in the hour. The aggressive posture of the FBI under Director James Comey is becoming a political problem for the White House, according to The Hill. Most noticeable as of late, the FBI's demand that Apple help unlock an iPhone used by one of the terrorists in the San Bernardino attacks. That's outraged Silicon Valley, a significant source of political support for President Obama and Democrats. More from Corey Bennett, cybersecurity reporter at The Hill. Corey, what are you hearing?
What's really interesting is that a lot of people are frankly surprised. I talked to some former White House officials who were saying, you know, they're a little bit surprised at how vocal, at how some even said, you know, vitriolic the FBI has been on its rhetoric surrounding wanting to get into this phone, when the White House has shown a lot of concern about that approach, about that tactic. So, you know, we've seen just throughout the years a number of, I wouldn't say rift necessarily, but these two sides kind of butting heads, kind of creating a little friction between them. And it's been interesting to watch.
All right, so what was the friction with the Black Lives Matter, for example?
So James Comey, the director of the FBI, has given some statements and some speeches when he tied the kind of the rising violent crime rates to the Black Lives Matter movement, their focus on police violence. Now, President Obama has kind of tried to dissuade people making that link. This is obviously a very charged issue right now, and so to have the FBI director speaking in a manner that President Obama has tried to avoid certainly has not helped the White House with its messaging on this issue.
What about Hillary Clinton, too, and the whole email investigation?
This probably is the biggest potential point of friction. I mean, this could upend the whole presidential election if there actually is an indictment of Clinton herself, of our top aides. I mean, this could really overturn the apple cart. And you know, the friction we've seen here is that President Obama has made some statements before where he's kind of downplayed what Clinton did. He said, yes, she made a mistake, but no, national security was not put at danger. That's frustrated a lot of FBI officials. I talked to a lot of former FBI agents who were frankly surprised that Obama would weigh in in what is an ongoing investigation. And it's typical protocol for the president, for the attorney general, for high-profile figures to not weigh in on ongoing investigations. And when Obama did that, FBI felt like they were kind of being pushed to the side, that he was trying to prejudge the outcome of their investigation. And so, you know, we've seen the FBI obviously conduct a very serious and thorough investigation here that could potentially have been more serious and long-running than many people thought. And that has been a big point of conflict.
We're speaking with Corey Bennett, cybersecurity reporter at The Hill. He's got a piece called Comey's FBI Makes Waves, talking about FBI Director James Comey. But he is a Republican, right? So, I mean, has anybody in the White House kind of called him in and said, hey, Director Comey, here's the Kool-Aid, start drinking it or get out? Like, has that gone down?
You know, I wish I knew. I wish I was a fly on the wall to those kind of closed-door meetings. But you do raise a good point about him being a Republican. He donated to Mitt Romney's campaign in 2012, which, you know, I'm sure does not win him a lot of friends in the White House. But, you know, all of that said, I think it's worth noting that publicly the two sides have supported each other. I don't think there's any personal animosity from what I can tell. It stems more from Comey's desire to be an independent agent from the administration. You know, he takes it very seriously that he's part of the Obama administration, but he wants to preserve the reputation of the FBI as a thoroughly independent, non-political organization.
How's he doing with that? Does he have a good reputation, say, as a law enforcement guy?
I think he does. You know, it stems all the way back. He's kind of been portrayed as a trailblazer, someone who kind of is willing to buck his superiors. A lot of people point to this very dramatic showdown. 2004, when he was in the Bush administration, he was the deputy. He was acting attorney general, and the Bush White House wanted to renew a warrantless wiretapping program. And attorney general at the time, John Ashcroft, was in the hospital very seriously ill. And a lot of people thought that they were trying to get Ashcroft to renew it. They were taking advantage of his illness, of him being mostly incapacitated. And Comey went to the hospital, blocked the Bush White House from being able to renew this, and threatened to resign. You know, it's a very dramatic moment. And we even talked to some people who were saying, you know, Comey could do that again. You know, he is the kind of guy that will put his foot down and take a stand. And, you know, some people even think that Clinton probe could be an instance in which Comey might threaten to resign again. Now, obviously, we're getting into very speculative territory there, but point being, he is portrayed, he is seen as the guy who's willing to put his foot down to take a stand for when he believes in a principle.
Thanks, Corey. Corey Bennett, cybersecurity reporter at The Hill. It is 13 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Don't pay your next medical bill until you get a second opinion. Why? Because 80% of all medical bills are wrong. Mistakes that are costing American families like yours and mine over $100 billion in overcharges annually. That adds up to about $1,000 per family per year. That's why I'm so impressed with Remedy. Remedy was created to make sure people never overpay due to medical billing mistakes. Here's what to do. First, simply send your medical bill to Remedy. Next, Remedy's medical specialists review your bills for mistakes, from double billings to bad addresses to incorrect medical codes, mistakes that could cost you thousands, even with insurance. Then Remedy finds and corrects any mistakes while working with your doctor's office and insurance company so you don't overpay. And here's the best part. If Remedy can't save you money, they won't charge you a dime. Go to tryremedy.com/deal, where there's never a charge unless they save you money. Again, the website, tryremedy.com/deal. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. The Netflix series Orange is the New Black is preparing for its fourth season, which will be out this summer. We're joined now by actress Laura Prepon, who plays Alex Voss. You know her also from the Fox program That 70s Show. She's also got a new book on proper nutrition. It's called The Stash Plan. Laura, fired up about the new season of Orange is the New Black?
Yeah, we come out June 17th. Honestly, we have to be so tight-lipped about everything, so I can't really give much away. But, you know, we take on some big subjects like, you know, capitalism and overcrowding in the prison system. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, this season is, but you know, all the relationships that you know and love, it's awesome. This season's really good. I think the fans are really, really going
to
love it.
Compared to what we know you from with That 70s Show, is this a more strenuous gig? Is it more stimulating? I don't know. How do you describe it?
It's different. I mean, it's like apples and oranges. I mean, 70s Show is a multi-camera comedy with a live studio audience. And Orange is the New Black is like shooting a film where you go to set at 4:30 in the morning and, you know, work a 17-hour day. Mm. I mean, it's vastly, vastly different. But I love it, and I wouldn't change it for the world. And at this point in my life, Orange is the perfect, you know, Alex Voss is the perfect character for my day job.
That's
for
great.
Sure.
It's not like the darkness, say, doesn't wear you down compared to the comedy of a 70s Show?
Well, no, because, you know, on Orange, the thing that's so great about the show is, like, you have to find levity in these situations. These women in prison, like, they laugh and cry and they find love and sisterhood. And
okay.
And it's because when you're in a bleak environment like a prison, you have to find levity or you won't survive. So the show is funny. I mean, when we're nominated for awards, we're put in the comedy category. Do I think we're Veep and, like, it's a full-blown comedy? No, because we have a lot of drama.
Yeah.
But, it, you know, that levity is definitely in the show. So I love dark humor, and it, this show is perfect for my sensibilities.
We're speaking with actress Laura Prepon. She is on the Netflix program Orange is the New Black. You may also know her from the Fox sitcom That 70s Show. Also in a movie coming out this fall called The Girl on the Train. And also out with a book. All right, so what's in this stash plan, this 21-day diet book?
It's interesting. It's not a diet book at all. It's a lifestyle plan. And I lived in Europe as a kid. And when I moved home, I started developing all of these really horrible food sensitivities and autoimmune diseases and, celiac disease and all these weird things that that Western medicine hadn't known about yet.
Mm.
Even 5 years ago, there isn't an option like a gluten-free option on every menu. You know, everybody knows what gluten intolerance is now. 10 years ago, no one had even heard of celiacs, which is also, you know, a gluten allergy.
Yep, yep.
And I was struggling with all these things in private. When I finally figured out what works for me, I had always done my meal prepping because I had so many food allergies, and that's the crux of the stash plan. You build a stash of food in 1 hour, two sessions a week. You build a stash of food that goes in your fridge, and every morning you build your meals from it, like a build-your-own-adventure. And it makes your life more worry-free. You start shedding weight. You start feeling better. It's more affordable. And it's incredible, and it's helping to heal so many people just like it did for me.
Give me a for example.
One stash, it's two proteins, two carbs, and two vegetables. So, you know, you'll have, like, you know, grass-fed beef burgers and turmeric turkey, and then the carbs will be sweet potato home fries and broth-infused brown rice. But the stash is, you know, you have these sweet potato home fries, you know, broth-infused brown rice. You might have some kind of cool cauliflower dish and beets, you know. And in the morning, you pull these six things out, and you build your meals for the day and for the next couple of days. And then that's basically it. It's like that's the crux of the plan.
Hmm.
And it's 80-20. So when we won the SAG Award for Best Ensemble a few weeks ago, we drank champagne, we ate chocolate, we did whatever we wanted. And the next morning, I pulled out my stash, and I made my breakfast.
Pulled out the stash, made the breakfast. There you go. Orange is the New Black actress Laura Prepon. 21 minutes after the hour on This Weekend. Thanks for spending part of your weekend listening to This Weekend. Do you take dietary supplements? Ever wonder how they interact with your prescription drugs or perhaps interfere? Here's This Weekend's Jennifer Koschenka.
Just because it didn't require a prescription doesn't mean it isn't powerful. Researchers are finding that some over-the-counter herbal supplements can interfere with other medications. With more is Laura Landreau of the Wall Street Journal. Laura, why are researchers concerned about supplements?
Well, these are things that literally millions of Americans take. I think surveys have shown that it's, you know, close to 70% of Americans are taking these supplements. But most importantly, and the ones they're really focused on, are that, you know, also large percentage of people who are taking them along with other prescription drugs, including those who have really serious diseases and cancers, where the drugs have what's known as a narrow therapeutic index, meaning, you know, if you screw with them at all, they don't work, or they could either be ineffective or be toxic.
What kinds of supplements are we talking about in general?
Pretty much it runs the gamut of the things that you're walking down that drugstore aisle and see for miles. You know, things like what they call the four G's, you know, garlic, ginseng, ginkgo. There are garlic even, you know. You think of garlic as something you throw into, you know, your cooking, and in that exposure, that's usually pretty good. However, when you start taking concentrated amounts of things like this, they have chemical properties and they interact with drugs. And if you have concentrated amounts over long periods, you can really run some risks of interference.
What kinds of interference? I mean, what actually is happening here?
Well, there are two ways it can go, really. You know, the body breaks down drugs through the liver. It basically metabolizes drugs with a class of enzymes. And these enzymes also act on the supplements. So some supplements may inhibit the enzyme's ability to break down a drug and get it out of your body. So that means the medication could be building up in potentially toxic levels in your body. conversely, other supplements may speed up the rate at which a drug is broken down, and then it gets out of your body too quickly to be effective.
Is this a problem because some of these supplements aren't regulated?
Well, the fact is even, you know, they are not regulated. They are basically, the FDA requires them to have good manufacturing practices. But, you know, there are so many things you have to worry about. You know, there are some good companies out there, obviously, that are putting these things out, manufacturing them carefully. But a lot of supplements have been found. You know, there's been attorney generals who have, you know, taken down some companies, and these supplements are often found to be adulterated with things. You know, Chinese herbs. Well, what's in those? They came from China. They found lead and arsenic in some of these things. So not only is the active compound in whatever that supplement is interacting with your medications, but there may be other things in there as well. Now, if it's a company, again, one of these companies that's doing its best to put out the best things, that's great. It's not, you know, it doesn't contain harmful substances, but they will even warn you. You know, you go onto some of these natural websites, or you go into the Council for Responsible Nutrition, which is a trade group, and they will tell you, tell your doctor about this. You know, these medications can interact with the supplements that you're taking and not telling your doctor about.
Laura, I was going to ask you, is this now just put the onus on a patient to say, hey, this is what I am taking right now?
Well, I think it puts the onus on both sides. The providers often don't ask. You know, when you fill out a medical form, when you write down, it should say, in addition to prescription medications, are you taking any over-the-counter supplements? They should ask you that. Doctors should always ask, especially if they're giving, you know, doctors who give, you know, blood thinners know that those blood thinners have to be very carefully calibrated and measured in order to work. So if patients are also taking supplements, they need to know what supplements are you taking, and are these supplements potentially interfering with the effectiveness of your anti-clotting drug.
You mentioned earlier garlic. Should we be worried about things that we're eating or cooking with?
Well, you know, the truth is that compounds in food and things like grapefruit juice people know about, you know, mostly if you're eating a balanced diet and getting normal amounts of things, you know, you're not going to have a problem because you're getting nutrients from food. And many people will say, don't take those supplements. Just eat a diet that's rich in those things. And you're not getting them at these crazy concentrated levels. The other thing is, you know, sometimes supplements may make people feel that they're being healthy and that they're fighting, you know, their immune system buildup, and, you know, they're getting all kinds of benefits that maybe they can't get from conventional medicine. But I think you really have to stop and think, you know, is there proof of this? What you're going to find again and again, by the way, is that it's inconclusive. We need more human trials.
Thanks, Laura. Laura Landreau from The Wall Street Journal with this weekend's Jennifer Koschenka. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. The new high-performance Dell Latitude systems are the most secure, manageable, and reliable business-class laptops and two-in-ones so employees can do their best work. Outfitted with the latest Intel Core processors, your team can reduce downtime by 50% and boost productivity with 4 times the performance. Make your work beautiful again at Dell.com/radio. Again, Dell.com/radio. Thanks for spending time with us on This Weekend. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Coming up this half hour, the possibilities for virtual reality, why first-time golfers don't become second-time golfers, and Germany wants the rest of the world to try its swamp juice. That story in about 20 minutes. It's been 5 years since that earthquake and massive tsunami that devastated parts of Japan. Dr. Michael Branigan, author of a new book called Japan's March 2011 Disaster and Moral Grit, calls it a triple catastrophe, and the recovery remains an ongoing ordeal. Mike, set this up.
The tsunami took place, the triple disaster took place March 11th, 2011, and the question that I raise in my book is, how, to what degree have we really recovered? Has the Japanese recovered from this? Now, triple disaster, the first was a terrible earthquake, of course, 9.0 on the Richter scale, around 50 miles east off the, in the Pacific Ocean, off the eastern coast of Tohoku, which is the northeastern part of Japan. And then you had some destruction inland from that, but you had this incredibly massive wave train, a tsunami, that came into shore and it devastated areas at least 100 miles along the coastline there, and we had almost nearly, the waves actually reached inland about 6 miles.
Problems from radiation, unproven at this point, is that what you said?
Pretty much, because they were, the ones that were very much close to the power plant, certainly now we're finding out there that they are suffering some effects from the radiation. And thyroid cancer incidences among kids have tripled in the last few years.
Okay.
Studies have been done of that. In terms of long-range medical effects and biological effects, there's yet to be studies yet to be confirmed and finalized on that. But no doubt about it, the amount of radiation that was released in the atmosphere, into the ground, and still to this day, thousands of tons of water, contaminated water, being poured into the Pacific Ocean, it's really going to cause all kinds of long-term effects. Now, keep that in mind. After all, Tokyo is going full-court press, preparing for its 2020 Summer Olympics. So that's another issue, that a lot of the monies and resources that could be used to rebuild that area are being funneled into construction for the Olympics.
We're speaking with Dr. Michael Brannigan, professor at the College of St. Rose in Albany, New York. He's got a book called Japan's March 2011 Disaster and Moral Grit, Our Inescapable In-Between, looking back at 5 years since that horrible earthquake and tsunami that devastated parts of Japan. At this point, how would you describe the rebuild? Are you saying that the Olympics are getting in the way?
Well, a lot of people in the Tohoku region who were affected clearly resent all the construction monies and the resources being funneled into the building and preparing for the Olympics. Of course, those who are proponents of the Olympics feel that this is going to be an economic boost as well as a moral boost for the country, which is sorely needed. But yes, this is what's happened. And historically, that Tohoku region that's been affected has often been known as this kind of a label given to it as being Tokyo's colony. In other words, historically, the needs of the people pretty much were secondary to the interests of Tokyo and other places in Japan. So there's a lot of resentment about that. Now, what's interesting is that Kamaishi, one of the worst hit cities along the coast, and I visited Kamaishi there. I spent some time there and worked there as a volunteer. They've actually been selected to host one of the cities to host the 2019 World Cup Rugby. I don't know how many Americans are interested in World Cup Rugby, but that's a pretty big sport. So we'll be having tens of thousands of people in Kamaishi, which is going to be interesting because the question is whether that's it's certainly a morale booster. But the question here is, being that it will be in 2019, will that pose any health risk to the participants and the visitors?
Thanks, Mike. Dr. Michael Brannigan. The book is called Japan's March 2011 Disaster and Moral Grit. It's 21 minutes now before the hour on this weekend. Mailing your letters and packages has just gotten a lot easier thanks to Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can mail and ship anything, anywhere using just your computer and printer. No more trips to the post office. It's so easy, anyone can do it. Just click, print, and mail. With Stamps.com, you can buy and print official U.S. postage right from your desk. Stamps.com does all the work for you. They even give you a digital scale that automatically calculates exact postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail. And the setup is easy, too. In minutes, you'll be printing your very own postage. You'll never have to go to the post office again. Right now, sign up for Stamps.com and use my last name, Deal, for this special offer. A 4-week trial plus a $110 bonus offer, including postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Deal. That's Stamps.com and enter Deal.
Hey, glad you're with us. On the tech front, Microsoft is releasing HoloLens to developers this month. As part of this, Microsoft has showcased some of the initial tools and games. Tech analyst Rob Enderle at the Enderle Group is imagining games we'd never thought we'd play before and uses for this that could be truly amazing. Rob, what do you envision?
So Microsoft just released the HoloLens to developers to order this month, and they'll get their HoloLens by the end of the month. And this is a big thing, of course, because now finally developers have access to the device and they can start thinking about what they're going to do with it. And I started thinking about some of the incredible things you could do with regard to gaming once this is in place, particularly if you tied it to an Xbox, which would be the way you'd probably roll it in most houses. And that means the system, the cloud service, whatever you're using to connect you to other users, can see you, and of course you can see what's ever rendered, and that becomes your reality. So you could do some really interesting stuff. Like, for instance, if you had a friend that was on the other side of the country, say you're in New York and they're in California, you could play tennis through your wall to their room. You'd see their room through your wall, they'd see your room through their wall, and you would be hitting the virtual ball back and forth on a net that existed in that hole between your walls. You could also also shoot at each other from behind your furniture, having virtual first person shooters.
Wow.
You were video conferencing. They could take and transport you and your desk into an auditorium where you're all watching an event, attending something. But as you look around, you see everybody else sitting at their desk in their chair, wearing their clothes, participating in the event just like they were there. And you could even have virtual concerts where all of the musicians weren't even in the same area, but they were virtually rendered on the stage, and yet they were still moving as they moved and playing as they played, with only their image affected and overlaid on a virtual background or even a real background.
Yeah.
This blend of real and virtual really opens the door to stuff that we just never thought about doing before.
Right. Holy smokes. I was talking with tech analyst Rob Enderle. Oh, man. Explain, I guess, the I don't know, the competition with TV here, or does this introduce a new wave or generation of video gamers?
Well, certainly a new generation of video gamers, but remember with HoloLens, it can place a display any place you look. So if you want the display on a white wall in your living room, it can put it up there. It kind of makes, I mean, if we're at the point where everybody has one of these things, it would make televisions or any kind of display monitors and the rest redundant, because it virtually places the display any place you want it, makes it as big as you want it. You want a 120-inch television, bingo, you got a 120-inch television, and you're not paying $250,000 for it. So it really has a potential to have us relook things. I mean, for instance, you wouldn't need windows in houses, and you just say, okay, I want a window there, and you place it logically, and then as you go around, you wear your HoloLens, which would probably get lighter and cheaper over time.
Yeah.
And when you looked at the place with a window, not only would you have a window, but you could have any view you wanted. Say you wanted a view from the top of the Himalayas. When you look out that window, your view is from the top of the Himalayas. If you want a view that's the ocean in Hawaii, you look out there and you've got a view that somebody now would pay $5, $6, $7 million to have in their house.
Thanks, Rob. It's tech analyst Rob Enderle, principal of the tech advisory firm, The Enderle Group. 13 minutes now before the hour on This Weekend. To run a successful business, you need to make the most of your time and money. Good news, LegalZoom can help you save both during National Small Business Month. LegalZoom is the smart way to start your business. Right now, when you incorporate or form an LLC, you can also save money on some of the basics to get up and running, like a 3-month trial of QuickBooks online accounting software and a domain name for a year through web.com, both at no charge. After your business is set up, LegalZoom can help with a lot more. Reviewing contracts and dealing with day-to-day legal hurdles takes time away from your growing business. That's what LegalZoom's business legal plan is for. You get legal advice for your business from independent attorneys licensed in 48 states. You also get access to NDAs, lease agreements, and more. The best part is you won't get charged by the hour, since LegalZoom isn't a law firm. Instead, you pay a low monthly fee. Save time and money starting and running your business during National Small Business Month at LegalZoom.com today. Don't forget to enter Gordon in the referral box at checkout. LegalZoom.com. Got a weekend of golf coming up? Consider this as you look around the course. Golf is attracting more new players in the U.S. now than at any time since the early 2000s. However, Wall Street Journal reporter Brian Costa says that only tells part of the story. The bigger piece of this is that the sport can hold on to people after they try it for the first time. Brian, what's going on?
Well, it's kind of a funny thing. Golf
now actually is attracting more beginners, first-time players to the sport than it has in more than a decade. However, the sport is still steadily losing overall participants, and the reason for that is that not many of these new people that the game attracts every year stick with it. And so if the sport could really keep more of the beginners that it attracts to try the game and try to get them hooked on it, it would be doing much better.
All right, so are there proposed solutions about how to keep those first-timers coming back, or at least a fraction of them?
Yeah, I mean, part of it has to do with, you know, just creating an atmosphere of courses that really understands that it is unfamiliar for many of these people and try to make them not feel like outsiders. You know, golf with all its etiquette and its rules can be intimidating for people. The other thing is just getting people to be more confident. A lot of times when you pick up golf, you know, it's your friend or your family member that introduces you to it and teaches you how to play. And that's actually not the best way for a beginner to sort of learn and get into it. They have programs, group lessons, and things like that that are aimed at really sort of guiding beginners out there for the first time and helping them get comfortable, get better at the game. One of them is called Get Golf Ready. They have a lot of other similar kinds of programs. So they recommend more of that as something that, you know, could help people get better faster so they can enjoy it.
Yeah.
And so those are possible solutions.
I know that a couple of popular reasons people say they don't play are time and money. It can be expensive. And two, if you're playing 18 holes, that, I mean, it could be 5 hours.
Yeah, those are issues, but, you know, what the National Golf Foundation has found in its research and surveys of people who quit the game is it really comes down to what they say is comfort and competence. You know, comfort around the course, being, you know, comfortable around other golfers. And really a lot of it is just, look, golf is hard. It takes time to get good at. And if you can get over the hump and get just confident enough at it to, you know, where you still feel the thrill of that one great shot.
Yeah.
Coming back, you know, if you get there, you know, it's easy to get hooked, but getting there can be tough, and it's tough over time when people don't have a ton of patience. They don't want to be told, we'll spend a year at this and you might be able to play well enough
right.
to enjoy it. You know, they don't want to hear that.
Right. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Brian Costa. He's got a piece entitled "Americans Want to Play Golf. That is until they try it." So I know you mentioned there are proposed solutions to get some of these first-timers to come back and not just give up on it, but is there a concerted effort here? I know you said some of the marketing of it isn't very effective.
Yeah, of those programs, yeah, I think something that, you know, most people probably just don't hear that much about and they don't know it's out there. You know, and frankly, you know, one of the other solutions is, you know, courses to try to, you know, makes the courses a little bit more forgiving and a little easier for people too, and that's something that you know, the courses are often designed for more regular players, and there's not enough of a sort of casual play area for people to just sort of get introduced to the game.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of solutions, but ultimately it comes down to the individual courses sort of taking it upon themselves to say, what can we do to make our course more friendly for people who don't haven't played golf before.
It's Wall Street Journal reporter Brian Costa. 6 minutes in front of the hour.
Men, if you're like me, you appreciate the feeling of a clean, smooth shave from a quality blade. The sort of shave that cuts clean without the burn. So why are you messing around with generic razors that cost $32 for an 8-pack when you can shave with Harry's high-quality German-engineered blades for half the price? And if saving money and a clean shave isn't incentive enough, Harry's will give you their starter set, complete with a razor, three of their world-famous blades, and shaving cream for just $15. And shipping is always free. We'll also give you $5 off your first order. Our way of saying thank you for trying us. How are we able to save you all this money and still give you the best shave you'll ever enjoy? By owning the factory that manufactures them. That's how. So go to Harry's.com right now and enter code 4000 at checkout. That's Harry's.com, code 4000.
So will the rest of the world come to embrace one of Germany's most popular soft drinks? It's a mix of cola and citrus soda that Germans call Spezi and gulp down in vast quantities. Pepsi and Coca-Cola each make versions of it. The Wall Street Journal says some people see a drink that resembles diluted cough syrup or rusty water, since traces of sediment swirl in some bottles, but a company called Fritz Kulturguter, a boutique soda maker from Hamburg, sees a market opportunity. The co-founder admits it's not an appetizing color when people are not used to it, but he intends to expand his version of Spezi, called Mishmash, to other European markets, including Britain and France. He says the strange look of it is part of the strategy. It's marketed as, quote, brutally delicious and has to have a cloudy look. One fan describes the appearance of Spezi as carbonated swamp juice. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend.